Well, it's an interesting story. We were studying large corporate organisations and how they were responding to major organisational change. And out of that, we ran into this new group of professionals in these large organisations called sustainability managers. And in discussions with them in that period around 2008, 2009, climate change was a big issue for them in major banks, airlines, manufacturing companies, mining and resource companies. And they saw that as both a sort of a risk in terms of regulatory risk, physical risk, reputational risk, but also a source of potential opportunities for new business services, products, etc. So climate change appeared to be on the radar of senior managers and major corporates, and we thought this would make a fairly interesting study in terms of how these companies are engaging with an issue that's out there in the social and political debate.
And you found that they're not doing a very good job.
Well, the companies we studied tended to be on the more the cutting edge, I guess, of responding to this issue. And so they were doing a lot of interesting things. They were trying to reduce their carbon footprint, improve their eco-efficiency, green their supply chains, develop new products and services, tap into new markets. And they were having quite a bit of success. The problem was that that was good for a single organisation, but climate change is a systemic problem and you need a systemic response. So having these islands of corporate excellence isn't really sort of dealing with the problem. And unfortunately, our debate and response to the climate science has been that business will lead and government will step back. So it's not really getting us to the levels of emissions reductions we're going to need to deal with the problem.
I would have thought that it would have been the situation that climate change would have set market signals that would have then forced business to take action.
Well, it is sending signals. It's sending signals for certain businesses like insurance companies in terms of physical risk and extreme weather events. So many of the big insurance companies were hit pretty hard by the floods in Queensland, the bushfires in Canberra, Black Saturday in Melbourne, etc. So certainly insurance companies and banks are very focused on climate change, and both from the risk side of it but also the opportunity side, that many of these major corporations see it almost as inevitable that carbon will be priced in some form in different global and local settings, and that will lead to potential upside opportunities as well.
Now, in terms of businesses, farm businesses, there's quite a variance. There's quite a lot of people that are actually taking some action, winemakers talking about it, yep, changing things and changing the mix of grapes and looking at different land areas. There are others that you'd put in the camp of deniers, saying that it's sort of climate variability. Is that what we see in general, the general business community too?
Yeah, there is significant diversity across the business landscape. And our study focused on companies that were at the more progressive end of that in terms of recognising that the science had important things to say in terms of future risk and opportunity for them and taking various forms of action. But in the middle, a large number of firms that weren't so focused on that issue, and many, I guess, small and medium-sized enterprises where it's not even on their radar. So there is that similar sort of diversity.
Is it a first world problem, or is it worse in the developing world?
Well, it's a global problem. I think the physical impacts are going to be far more pronounced for developing economies because they don't have the infrastructure and social and political sort of apparatus to deal with extreme weather events, for instance. So Bangladesh would be an obvious case. But as we've seen in the case of New Orleans with Hurricane Katrina in 2005, even the most powerful country in the world faced with a major extreme weather event can really scramble to try and deal with it adequately. So we're all going to be affected by climate change, no matter where we are in the world. Unfortunately, those developing economies are probably going to be hit a lot harder because they lack the social resilience
to respond. Are you basing that on the current science, the climate scientists, that you're basing your views on what's happening, will likely to happen on current science?
Yeah, so if you look at the IPCC fifth assessment report that came out last year, there's various reports looking at the physical science basis and then the potential for social responses to these impacts. And the IPCC is a very conservative group. I think we were having this discussion last night. One of the problems is that climate scientists tend to look at the middle or best case type scenario, looking at where the various projections are going in terms of our emissions and whether we're going to mitigate in sufficient haste. Another group that looks at probably the worst case scenario, however, are the military planners in the US and other countries that are now starting to scenario plan around what will happen in a worst case scenario if we don't get our act together and we maintain a business as usual path. What does that mean for melting ice sheets, sea level rise, geopolitical risk between countries in Southern Asia, resource wars over the Arctic, those sort of scenarios.
But if you look at, you say capitalism is not really dealing with this issue, but communist countries, command economies aren't really dealing with this. We look at China, we look at Russia.
Mm. Well, yeah, there is a problem here, I guess, in the sense of saying capitalism is not dealing with it. Capitalism is doing what it does in the sense of, although Sir Nicholas Stern in the UK termed climate change the greatest market failure the world's ever seen, in a sense what the market does is to maximise short-term profit. So we can blame capitalism, but that's what it's designed to do, short-term profit maximisation. And so an issue like climate change is something it can't really deal with. And that's the nub of the problem. If we look at China, sure, it's a command economy, but it's also a state capitalist economy. And if you look at the rapid economic growth that's occurring in China around state-owned enterprises, massive building boom, massive expansion of the middle class.
You think it's more towards a capitalist market model than a communist command?
Yeah, I think so. I think if you look at modern China, it's state-based capitalism, and they've opened it up to market forces. There's a booming global economy surging in China. We've outsourced a lot of our manufacturing to China. So they are going for economic growth. And the nub of the issue is compound economic growth ad infinitum with the assumption there'll be no impacts on our ecosystem. It's clear that we're now pushing up against planetary boundaries.
And that's the sort of thing where farmers, talking about ecosystem and the natural world. I mean, so what's your advice about what should be happening here?
Well, look, there isn't an easy answer. It would be marvellous.
Will the market solve it? Will there be market signals that come in and force change?
We would argue that a market solution on its own is not going to be sufficient. Like, for instance, introducing carbon pricing or emissions trading scheme is probably a good thing. The issue is around the actual price of the ton of carbon emissions that's sort of set by the market or by government. And we really need a significant price to send that signal for massive or significant decarbonisation. The nub of the issue is trying to decarbonise our energy and transport systems at a really rapid scale. And unfortunately, the current political debate, even in the lead up to the Paris climate talks, is not really dealing with the scale of the problem or the scale of the decarbonisation we need.